Coming up on Fronteras, a nuclear waste facility in the salt caverns of southern New Mexico has been an engine of job growth there.
True waste, temporarily stored above ground, poses a potential threat to human health and the environment. WIPP's mission is to isolate that waste forever.
Plans to ship waste from leaky tanks in Washington State to New Mexico are stirring up an old debate about the storage of toxic waste. We'll hear from New Mexicans who are debating the new plan. And filmmaker Rodrigo Gudino says his earliest memories of being horrified are connected to religious images.
I remember looking through that. Those are very, very early in my memories, you know, of ever being terrified. And they're obviously religious. They come from the Catholic faith.
Gudino calls his latest film religious horror, but it has nothing to do with the devil. Coming up, a filmmaker raised along the border. First, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among 7 public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its Local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. For decades, Arizona's business community has been hoping for the Port of Guaymas in Mexico to expand, since it is the landlocked state's connection to the global supply chain. Now those plans are finally advancing. Fronteras desk reporter Ju Joffe Block is traveling with a trade mission from Phoenix to Mexico City and sent this report.
The Port of Guaymas is on the Sea of Cortez, about 250 miles south of Nogales. Arizona leaders believe greater capacity there would boost Arizona's international trade, which lags behind California and Texas, as well as nurture a local industry in shipping logistics. And yet,
there's just been so much talk about Guaymas as a port, but it really hasn't ever materialized to its true potential.
Margie Emmerman is Mexico policy advisor to Arizona's governor, but she now believes there's real progress. Mexico's president has announced a $600 million public-private investment to modernize the port. The director of Mexico's ports, Guillermo Ruiz de Teresa, told a delegation from Phoenix on Thursday the plan is to add 10 terminals and ultimately add 23 million tons of capacity by 2020. Ruiz de Teresa invited the delegation to send him comments about Arizona's needs for the expansion. That cheered Todd Sanders of the Phoenix Chamber of Commerce.
It's a huge opportunity for us to be on the ground floor to say, hey, if this is going to be a reality, here's how it will work best for Arizona.
Mexican authorities say the port's primary purpose will be for transporting minerals, though Arizona interests want it to also handle shipping containers. In Mexico City, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
A French judge decided this week to allow the sale of American Indian artifacts at a Paris auction house against the Hopi tribe's objections. Hopi leaders say their sacred items were stolen from their northern Arizona reservation. From Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
The 70 headdresses are central to Hopi ceremonies. Hopi men put what they call their Kachina friends on and become that spirit or ancestor. Arizona State University law professor Rebecca Sosi says the sale is not only illegal, but also unethical.
If trafficking in these items would be like trafficking in a human entity, because they have an essence to them, they have volition, then we need to respect that.
The auction house says it has papers proving the artifacts were bought legally from galleries. But tribal leaders say they were likely taken from the reservation several decades ago, and it's against Hopi law to remove them from its reservation. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
It's a long way from the rim of the Grand Canyon down to the bottom where the Colorado River flows. For decades, mules have delivered mail and care packages to the boatmen and backpackers at Phantom Ranch, a small outpost on the floor of the canyon. But now the company that runs the mule train says it's too much of a burden. The last day for package delivery is Monday, April 15th. From the Changing America desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
The packers are up at 3 a.m. getting the mules ready for their 7-mile trek down into the Grand Canyon.
I need to catch up on my beauty sleep, man.
That's the truth.
Hey, I'm here for eye candy.
Levi Goldsmith and Chaz Brashears brush and feed the mules, then strap each one with 150 pounds of saddlebags filled with boxes. They work quickly so they can leave at first light. The mules supply Phantom Ranch with what it needs 365 days a year. Phantom, as it's called, is a modest resort, about a dozen cabins, two bunkhouses, and a restaurant nestled in the trees beside Bright Angel Creek, a tributary to the Colorado River. The company that runs the mules and all the hotels and restaurants in the park is Zantara. John Barry works for the company and is in charge of the mules on the South Rim.
And we pack everything from food to bedding, pillows, windows, everything. Christmas trees during Christmas. And the mail, all on the back of a mule.
You know, it's almost like getting a toy at Christmas.
Kristen Harnett has been getting mail, including packages, at the bottom of the Grand Canyon for more than a decade. She and her husband John are both river guides. Care packages and letters by mule have sustained the ties between them.
I remember one summer, John and I spent, six or eight weeks apart. And we were both on river trips, and when he got home, I was left the day before, or somehow we missed each other. And that is a very long time. So I look forward to the letters from him because you're inspired down there, too. They're kind of poetic, you know? So it's kind of like being there with them and being connected.
It sounds very romantic.
It is.
Ann Harnett can still get letters, but she's sad to see the package service canceled. Zantara's John Barry says the packages became unmanageable.
It got too big for us. We just could not handle how many boxes were being sent down.
Ann Barry says they also had to haul a lot of boxes out.
I think last year we packed out 150 pounds worth of boxes that had not been picked up. I know at Christmas time we packed out 25 pounds of cookies that were left down there for a couple months.
For the past 10 years, river guide Marika Taney has spent her birthday on the river.
And so that was always a really special thing to get to Phantom and have something waiting for you for your birthday. Because a lot of times, you know, clients, you can tell them it's your birthday, but it doesn't really mean anything. And sometimes I wouldn't even tell people. And so to have that little bit there when I'd get to Phantom was really special.
But now Taney says she'll have to make do with birthday cards.
I just hope they really, really hope that they don't stop just at least the letters.
Zantara says it has no plans of discontinuing its letter service. So you can still send postcards and letters into the canyon, and you can send them out of the canyon as well. And if you do, it will still get stamped, sent by mule from the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I'm Laura Morales in Flagstaff.
The U.S. Department of Energy says it wants to send 3 million gallons of radioactive tank waste at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation to a storage site in New Mexico. That's 3 million gallons out of a total of 56 million gallons of some of the most toxic stuff on Earth. We have two stories on this issue. The first one from Anna King of the Northwest News Network in Richland, Washington.
At a recent news conference at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, a media official tests the podium microphone for a herd of news camera operators and journalists.
Do you like this tank farm behind me? Looks pretty good, huh?
A wooden podium is set up a few feet from the tank farm cyclone fence.
And we have some good news here today.
After Washington Governor Jay Inslee learned that up to 3 gallons of radioactive waste a day was seeping into the sand at Hanford, he toured the site looking for answers. At the conclusion of his bus ride, he laid out the federal government's preferred solution.
With an effort to remove that waste from these single shell tanks and remove the product after a stabilization process, to New Mexico at the WIPP facility in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
The waste Inslee is talking about is different from all the rest. Federal officials think that 3 million gallons could be classified as transuranic waste, or TRU for short. Pronounced?
TRU.
That's Cheryl Whalen. I turned to her for answers because she's Washington State's radioactive waste expert.
Okay, this comes out of 40 CFR 191. Transuranic waste, as used in this part, means waste containing more than 100 nanocuries of alpha-emitting...
Whalen has a steely gaze and 7 years of tank farm watching under her belt. Right now, she's reading me the legal definition of true waste.
Waste that the department has determined with the concurrence of the administrator do not need the degree of isolation...
It's difficult to understand, even for the experts like Whalen, but here's the gist. Transuranic waste has a lot of very long-lived radionuclides with higher numbers on the periodic table than uranium. Think that special little box on the periodic table under the big one you studied in high school. Some radioactive stuff in it has a half-life of 24,000 years. That means this waste will be dangerous for a long time, longer than a lot of the other waste at Hanford. But here's the thing. It has never been in contact with high-level waste. It's from a different chemical process. Sure, it's hot, but some of it's easier to handle. So that's why Hanford engineers can send this waste to salt caves in New Mexico, and the rest of it is waiting for a $12 billion waste treatment plant in southeast Washington. Whalen says the similarities between high-level waste and true waste are...
they're both very hazardous, very long-lived.
And before Hanford's tank waste can be sent to New Mexico, the waste may have to be redefined in law, and rules would have to change at the southwest site.
We think that's a designation that would have to be made by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and not the Department of Energy.
Tom Carpenter is the head of Hanford Challenge, a Seattle-based watchdog group. His and two other environmental organizations say DOE's plan is illegal and a time waster. They just sent a letter saying that to Energy Secretary Stephen Chu.
Again, you're just putting complication upon complication and risk, and we're tired of that. We'd like to see a simple solution that gets us down the road, and that solution is new tanks.
The Department of Energy responds that the new option would expedite cleanup at Hanford without risking the mission of the Federal Waste Storage Facility in New Mexico. I'm Anna King in Richland.
Next, a story from New Mexico where some people are not happy about the plans to move the waste there.
If we accept the Hanford waste because they're having problems at Hanford, we are going to end up taking care of all the problems that they have in all of the facilities in the United States. And I don't think New Mexicans want to be in that position.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. The Department of Energy recently announced a plan to help resolve a problem with leaky storage tanks holding nuclear waste at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State. Their solution?
Remove the product after a stabilization process to the WIP facility in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
But as Elaine Baumgartel reports for the Fronteras desk, WIP, the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in southern New Mexico, has been prohibited from receiving Hanford tank waste for nearly a decade.
250 million years ago, a bedded salt formation resulted from the evaporation of the Permian Sea.
This informational video from the Department of Energy describes the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant. It's nearly half a mile underground near Carlsbad, New Mexico. The facility provided a jump start to the failing Carlsbad economy in the 1990s when unemployment was high and people were leaving the largely blue-collar town. WIP brought around 800 white-collar jobs and transformed the community.
Today, that same salt formation protects our future by providing a safe place to permanently dispose of the nation's defense-related transuranic radioactive waste.
New Mexico has a long tradition of dealing with waste from U.S. nuclear weapons facilities. Think Los Alamos National Laboratory and the birth of the atomic bomb. As part of the early negotiations between the state and the DOE, it was agreed that only transuranic waste, consisting mainly of contaminated tools, clothing, soil, and sludge, would be allowed at WIP. This so-called true waste is less radioactive than high-level waste, which comes from the reprocessing of spent nuclear fuel. WIP is not equipped to handle that super hot stuff. But tank waste at Hanford has always been managed as high-level waste. So back in 2004, shipments of waste from the tanks were prohibited by New Mexico, a prohibition the DOE is now proposing that the state eliminate.
Because it was managed as high-level waste doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it really is.
John Heaton is a former New Mexico state representative and chair of the Carlsbad Mayor's Nuclear Opportunities Task Force.
That tank waste has since been analyzed thoroughly, and none of those incompatibilities now are known to exist. Those were hypothetical at the time that that prohibition was put in place.
Supporters say the Hanford shipments would extend the repository's mission and keep people working long after waste from Los Alamos National Labs is shipped over the next couple of years.
WIP has a mission for transuranic waste, and it has 16 square miles of bedded salt, and we're barely using two-thirds of a square mile, so there's a vast volume available.
Come on in. On a recent evening in Albuquerque, Janet Greenwald and other members of nuclear watchdog groups met over bowls of vegetable soup to discuss their opposition to the DOE plan.
Through the years, we've all noticed that if you talk to people too much about nuclear issues, their eyes just kind of glaze over because, you know, you can't see it, you can't hear it.
But waste destined for WIP is driven right through small New Mexico communities by truck, and Greenwald worries about the potential for nuclear spills.
If we accept the Hanford waste because they're having problems at Hanford, we are going to end up taking care of all the problems that they have in all of the facilities in the United States. And I don't think New Mexicans want to be in that position.
Don Hancock is another opponent. He directs the Nuclear Waste Project for the Southwest Research and Information Center. For Hancock, the DOE proposal to remove the New Mexico prohibition is a rushed response to a political crisis. Any Hanford waste would have to be processed in a brand new facility there, he says, before it could be shipped to WIP.
They'd have to spend all that money anyway. I don't know anybody from a technical standpoint that thinks either they can do that or that they could do that anytime soon or that it would be cost effective.
The Department of Energy is preparing their official request for the New Mexico Environment Department to remove the prohibition on Hanford tank waste, according to a DOE statement. Once that request goes in, public comments will be taken over a 60-day period and during two public meetings. I'm Elaine Baumgartel in Albuquerque.
Filmmaker Rodrigo Gudino was born in San Diego, grew up in Tijuana, and now lives in Canada, where he publishes a cult favorite horror magazine called Rue Morgue. KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando says his new film reflects the influence of both borders.
Growing up Catholic can introduce you to horror at an early age. Just ask filmmaker Rodrigo Gudino. His first memory of being horrified was by Gustave Doré's etchings for Dante's Inferno.
I remember looking through that. Those are very, very early in my memories, you know, of ever being terrified. And they're obviously religious. They come from the Catholic faith.
Add to that growing up Catholic in Mexico.
Their representation of Jesus as a suffering figure is quite extreme in some cases. He's bleeding and bruised and cut open and things, quite grotesque. You know, when you're in other parts of North America, he's a resurrected Christ. He's very, you know, clean and respectable. But here, they don't shy away from showing his suffering side.
Renowned international filmmakers Luis Buñuel and Alejandro Jodorowsky came to Mexico to make films. They created a tradition of Mexican horror and fantasy, colored by Catholic images and religious provocation.
Jodorowsky, I would say, really introduced me to the language of symbolism in cinema. I was always interested in that in literature, and Buñuel as well. I guess there was a surrealist aspect to their work.
These are not the kind of influences he found when he moved to Canada.
Canada is a very kind of material place in a way, actually. It doesn't have, I would say, the imagination that Mexico has. And while I appreciate the sort of cold Canadian sort of clinical approach to films, I'm simply not there. I draw from other places, and Tijuana in Mexico is a big source of inspiration for me.
Gudino decided to make his own kind of religious horror with his latest film, The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee.
I'm at my mom's place now. Something happened that I can't really explain.
The story involves Leon, a man who returns to his estranged mother's house after she's died. The house is filled with religious statues that remind Leon of his mother's strict and terrifying religious teachings. Gudino wanted to make a supernatural horror film, but one that avoided the devil.
So this movie is really not about that at all. I wanted to get away from that, present a religious horror film where the religious horror is religion itself.
Gudino's film is fascinating for the way it goes against expectations. While so much of contemporary horror is about extreme gore and in-your-face filmmaking, his film is all about elegant restraint and a slow ratcheting up of tension. It also surprises us with the type of religious images, in this case angels, that it chooses to employ. And that the way Leon chooses to fight off his fears is not through religion and faith, but rather through reason and science. You could call this an atheist take on Catholic horror.
The protagonist is someone who has rejected the religion of his mother and has done so as a Western rationalist. And in fact, that's really the only way he could come to terms with some of those things, unless he was going to admit that maybe his mother was right.
Gudinho says his mother raised him Catholic, but never forced her beliefs on him. Yet he adds, whenever you grow up with an institution, you want to challenge it. Although he feels that Catholicism as a religious institution leaves a lot to be desired, he still feels its influence.
To this day, I sometimes walk into churches and I feel the terror of that terror of being confronted with a God, you know, and that this thing that might be there, like in that space that's not human, you know. But I guess I have an active imagination too, right?
Gudinho brings together a perfect storm of elements. Born in the U.S., raised in Mexico, and making films in Canada, he seems influenced by all three countries, but dominated by none. Perhaps that's why his film feels like a fresh take on familiar genre elements. In San Diego, I'm Beth Accomando.
The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee opens in Canada on May 9th and will eventually be available online. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our pieces. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Fronteras Desk. You may subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.